You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Here is the percentages. Pro Football Focus. Fourth and goal from the 8-yard line, 2 minutes and 8 seconds to go, 3 timeouts for both teams. Packers win probability, if they go for it, is 11%. Packers win probability, if they convert on fourth down, is 31%. Packers win probability, if they fail to convert, is 5%. Their win probability, if they kick the field goal, is 7%. I would have gone for it, and I said it in the moment I would have gone for it, because I have Aaron Rodgers, and this is the best red zone offense this year that we've ever seen in the last 20 years since they start keeping those stats. I'm going to have confidence in him. I didn't like the play calling with first, second down, but I would have gone for it and then taken my chance with a two-point conversion. Worst case scenario, we don't get it. I got Brady maybe at the 5-yard line. Maybe we get the ball back. We still have to score a touchdown, no matter what. It feels like there are better scenarios going for it than not going for it. It's the story that won't go away. Neither will Chris Sims, Pro Football Talk Live co-host, former NFL quarterback. I didn't even invite him on. He just showed up. I just looked up, and there he is, zooming in. How long do you think we stay with the scenario with the Packers there with 2 minutes to go inside the 10?
Well, I don't think it's going to die down this week, you know, especially with no game to look forward to this weekend. There's going to be two moments in that game that will be scrutinized, I think, throughout the week from talking heads like you and I. I mean, first off, yes, that moment, you explained it perfectly, I thought. I'm with you 100%. I was watching the game with my little boy, Philip, and we both looked at each other and went, what? They're kicking a field goal? You know, we were shocked. I understand it's a good Buccaneers defense. I understand they held them to a field goal in the first half one time down there. But also remember, Devontae Adams dropped a touchdown pass on the left side. And like you said, yeah, it's a great red zone offense, and it's Aaron Rodgers. And you go down swinging with your best punches. And, you know, I'm sorry, Green Bay's defense is not the best punches. It's Aaron Rodgers. That's why you were there.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure this out. If he knew on third down, if you don't get it, we're kicking the field goal. Like that's what I'm really curious about, Chris, because he should have known. What if he ran and they went down to the two? Are they still kicking the field goal no matter what? Because it feels like you have to have two plays called in that moment.
Yeah, I would think so. I think he explained it pretty good after the game, Matt LaFleur, and just saying, hey, the 8 yards was too much. But, you know, where I would argue and go, I know it's too much. Yeah, okay, but all right, 8-yard line, four-yard line. Hey, I'll tell you, as an ex-quarterback, if you gave me one play from the 4 or one play from the 8, I'd rather have him from the 8-yard line to have a little more room on the field to throw the ball and maybe stress their defense instead of being on the 2 or 3-yard line and crammed in there. So it was a tough decision. I get that. I understand it. But I think the reasons you laid out there and the fact that, man, we've seen Tom Brady close out games, what, 7 million times before?
Yeah.
I think those two reasons alone would have made me go for it.
Yeah, it's one thing I got Rodgers. The other thing, I'm going to turn the ball over to Tom Brady. It just doesn't make any sense. I know you and Florio talked about this today on Pro Football Talk Live. How real is this Aaron Rodgers story, or what is real about this Aaron Rodgers story?
I don't know if there's anything real as far as like him wanting to leave town or anything like that. I don't know. He's just, I'm more of the, you heard me if you were watching the show today, he's frustrated. Yes. He's sick of carrying the team. He's sick of the team never going all in to support him. And then here we are, you know, on the Tuesday after another big loss for Rodgers, and everybody just blames him. You know, I watch a lot of the shows yesterday, and it's just, oh, Rodgers can't get over the hump. Rodgers choked. And I want to be like, what? I mean, he was the best player on the team out there. He made one mistake the whole game. So I'm sure he is frustrated. I expect to see him back with Green Bay, but I'd also expect him to kind of continue to mess with them and flex his power on them a little bit too, which I understand.
But is, you know, this whether, a money grab though? This is just, you know what? Why don't you restructure? Could it be beneficial for both parties here, restructuring a deal for Rodgers, knowing that Jordan Love is the quarterback in waiting?
Well, that's where I was going to go with that right there, because that's where it really comes down to. I mean, one, hey, I want to say, like, well, if you're not going to give him receivers, then give him the leftover money and let him have it, okay? All right? And then the other aspect of that is, yes, I think you kind of laid it out right there. He wants to be able to call his own shots. And right now, I think he feels like, wait, they drafted a quarterback and they're just kind of laying in the weeds for the right moment to where, ooh, I don't have a great year or whatever that is, to now they're going to go, oh, we're going to change to Jordan Love and do that. So he probably, if he does want this contract extension or more money, it's more to solidify, wait, I'm going to be the one that dictates how this ends and when I want to leave or if I leave and all that. But still, we're going to sit here 2 days after the NFC Championship game, and I'm still going to tell you that Jordan Love pick at the end of the first round was the dumbest pick of last year's NFL draft. There's no other way to say it. You've got a quarterback who's one of the five best quarterbacks in the league. You go all in right now. The 1977 grooming the quarterback for the future story is over. We left it back in 1977. Rookie quarterbacks now can come in and be among the best quarterbacks in the game. So I'm just, that still bothers me too.
Yeah, it's like Tommy Maddox being drafted and you have John Elway.
You don't
need to do that. Deshaun Watson feels real, though, Chris. It feels like that they've reached that point of there's no turning back here. Now, I guess, do you agree with me on that?
I do agree with you. Okay. Yes, I do. I've heard from the start that it was teetering very close to that. You know, I have heard the rumors even before it broke publicly that, you know, he had his eye on a place like Miami and things like that from people I know in the situation. But I do think it's very real. And I do think that ultimately he'll ask to get out of there.
Okay. But what do you give up if you're the Jets with the number two pick overall? How much is enough? How much is too much? Or is there something, a scenario that's too much for Deshaun Watson?
Well, I mean, it's going to take at least three first round picks, right? I mean, I don't think you can really even start the conversation at least at any lower than that. Jamal Adams, Khalil Mack, Jalen Ramsey, all those trades got two first round picks. We're talking about Deshaun Watson, quarterback. We know that the importance of that. And a top five quarterback in football at that, who's at the start of the prime of his career. And, you know, we could have this guy for the next 10, 12, 15 years. So there's great value in that. To me, Dan, a team like the Jets, I know it's awesome to have Deshaun Watson and do all that. But, man, are you going to trade the farm away just to what? Go 4-12 with Deshaun Watson and, like, have the same scenarios that he's got down with the Houston Texans?
Wait, you wouldn't trade for him if you're the Jets?
I would think a little bit. I wouldn't. It's not a slam dunk to me. No, I would have two things going through my mind. Whoa, I have so many damn holes on my team. How am I going to fill these? We need offensive linemen, running back, receivers. We have no pass rushers. Our secondary's average as hell. So they have a lot to work to do there. And now you're going to trade away all these assets to fill those holes? I would think twice about that. And certainly a Joe Douglas who comes from Philadelphia and Baltimore, he wants to build through the draft. That's how those teams were built. So I would. And then here's the second thing that pops into my mind just with this scenario. You know, Ryan Tannehill with the Miami Dolphins would pop into my mind to go, wait, what if the Dolphins had kept Ryan Tannehill and used a top five pick on trading down to get more players or a top receiver or whatever last year's draft? All those things would jump out to me. And I would honestly be scared a little if I'm Deshaun Watson to go to a place like New York, even though I might like the head coach, to go there and go, man, we got a lot of work to do with this roster. I don't think that's necessarily appealing either.
Well, if I'm the Texans, and I know that he's got a no trade, but I want to trade with a team that's a perennial, historically bad, because I want to make sure those draft picks are good that I'm going to get. If I'm trading with the Colts, they're going to be picking 27th. I don't want that. I want Washington or the Jets. I don't know who else you could trade him to, because he's going to have to want to go there. So that I would love if I trade him to the Jets, I'm pretty safe in assuming I'm going to get some decent picks, top 15 picks for a couple of years.
Yeah, well, you're probably right about that. Yes. But the other thing is, like you said, you're going to get the great draft picks. Deshaun's going to have to sign off on it. And hey, listen, if he's willing to sign off on a team like that, good for the Houston Texans. And you go and you run with that deal. I really thought all along, though, it would be a team more that's kind of set up in a lot of ways and feeling comfortable about their roster as a whole and saying, wait, we're really close. We just need a quarterback now to kind of push us over the edge. I thought we would see more of that type of team involved in this, maybe like in New England, maybe like the San Francisco 49ers and some other teams like that. That, to me, I felt like fit the mold of the Deshaun Watson trade more than, you know, the team that's in a total rebuild mode.
He's Chris Sims, Pro Football Talk Live co-host, former NFL quarterback. Adam Schefter had a tweet. He says that he thinks that the over-under of teams changing quarterbacks this offseason is 18. And then he says, I'm going with the over. If we just run down the list here of teams that are going to change their quarterbacks.
Yeah.
That's a lot of turnover here. Over half the league. It feels like you got some named quarterbacks who aren't going to be starting quarterbacks. You got probably four, maybe five quarterbacks drafted in the first round this year.
Right.
I mean, that's a lot of turnover, Chris.
I think we're going to see, the lights have gone on in the NFL that, wait, we don't like have to go all in on our quarterback all the time. There's a lot of good ones out there. The Jared Goff and his paying $33 million, I think, has opened up a lot of people's eyes in football, too, to go, wait, if we just build a good team and we have a good quarterback, we don't have to have a superstar quarterback. We can be competitive in the mix of things. But, yeah, Dan, I mean, when you just look at it, Atlanta, Philadelphia, Detroit, Carolina, San Francisco, Chicago, the Rams, we'll see where that goes. That's still up in the air. Washington. That's just the NFC. New Orleans, we know, other than Atlanta, that like all those teams could possibly have different quarterbacks. So it is going to be an intriguing offseason and a lot of musical chairs.
Yeah, Ben Roethlisberger with Pittsburgh.
Right.
We assume Dak Prescott is going to, you know, re-sign with Dallas there. New England, they're going to be in the market for a quarterback here. Man, that's a big turnover there. Big turnover.
It definitely is.
The Buffalo Bills' future is what?
It's still bright. I mean, on the right path. Have a lot of the cake is built, right? They just need some icing now. That's where I look at it. The cake is built. It's really good. I like it. It's delicious. Wait, can we improve the icing? And what I mean by that is, like, they need – you could see there was a difference in the look between them and the Kansas City Chiefs on Sunday night, right? It just looked like it in their uniforms and then the speed of the field. They are missing a few studs on each side of the ball. They need a top-tier running back or at least a legitimate bell cow running back. I also believe they need one more legit receiver. You know, listen, John Brown, he didn't get open very much towards the end of the year. They need another guy to be a complement to Stephon Diggs. And then on the defense, you see, I think they need another clever corner and a pass rusher, something like that. But it's just a few draft picks and a free agent signing, some splash signings. And I think that Buffalo is going to be a force to be reckoned with here for a few years.
When do you make your Super Bowl pick?
Well, I picked the Chiefs to start the year. I'm not going against the Chiefs. I don't give a damn if NBC wants me to wait for my podcast or not. I can't pick against the Chiefs.
Can you bet against Brady?
It's hard to. It is hard to. But I think I've just gotten to the point where in these type of games, I got to see the Chiefs lose them before I pick against them. And as much as I respect Brady and I love the Bucks, they have a special place in my heart. I think just my football acumen wants to say, no, I still favor the Chiefs. Scary, though. Close matchup.
I can pick against Brady. I can't bet against Brady. I don't know. I just feel – I've been there too many times where you go, you know, maybe they shouldn't win this game or they won't win this game. And then they win this game. The last couple of weeks, I mean, you're not – I thought they were going to lose in Green Bay.
Well, he did every – listen, that's one thing that's not being talked – I mean, he did everything to try to lose it. I mean, that was almost –
Have you ever thrown three picks and a half?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. Yes, I have. Definitely.
Don't think. Paulie, check and see if Sims has thrown
three. I did. Picks. I think I did it in the Big 12 championship against Colorado, just to let you right out there. So I didn't even have to wait to the NFL before I did it. I did it in college, all right?
But as no an problem. NFL quarterback, has Brady done something that you haven't done, and that is throw three picks and a half?
I think you could be onto something. I don't know if I have. I don't think I did throw three and a half. I think I've had three in a game, four in a game, but I don't think I got three and a half. So, yeah, I got something on him.
And definitely not three consecutive drives.
No, not three consecutive drives. Certainly not. He's amazing. What Brady did for them in that game, I don't look at, yeah, hey, great drive to get the field goal at the end. The big thing to me was for a young football team who had not been in that situation, it's how he started the game was the importance. He gave everybody the confidence to be like, wait, we belong here. We can win. This is good. And all those third down big time throws he made, that to me is why you got Tom Brady. And he was special. He's not, as we talked about during the year, he's not going to carry the squad in the fourth quarter like he once could. But he's still really damn good, and man, can he throw that football still.
Yes, Paulie.
Dan, not only has Chris Sims never thrown three picks in an NFL game in his career, Chris Sims has only 18 career interceptions. Tom Brady has 191, way less.
You're so much better than Brady.
It's not even close. I knew it. Damn, why did I retire?
Does Aaron Rodgers have more interceptions than Chris Sims does?
Oh, totally, like 75 more.
Man, I know. What am I doing? I got out too early.
Nobody needs to know that you didn't play that long, Chris. It's just you have fewer interceptions than Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers.
I'm going to start using that. I'm going to start using that. Thanks, Dan Etz. I appreciate that.
Thank you, Chris. Good to talk to you. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good. See you guys.
That's Chris Sims, Pro Football Talk Live co-host, former NFL quarterback. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. Throughout the show, whether it's on the radio portion or the TV portion or during the commercial breaks, we'll be bringing you some athletes, coaches, former teammates who reminisce about Kobe Bryant, their favorite Kobe Bryant stories. It was a year ago today that we lost Kobe, his daughter, and seven others in that helicopter crash, including Jerry West, who had comments. We talked to Jerry, and you know my relationship with Jerry, and this is one of the hardest requests I've ever made because I wanted to have Jerry tell me about Kobe, but we reached out to him the day after Kobe had passed away, and he joined us on the show. We were in Miami at the Super Bowl, and this is what the former Laker GM had to say, his fondest memories of Kobe Bryant.
You know, the players would call him Hollywood because of the way he played. You know, he'd dribble through five guys, not run a play, and dunk the ball. And, and you know, it's all well and good to hear the name Hollywood, but I said I had a very serious talk with him, and because he wouldn't get an opportunity to play, and he was young and wanted to play. And I said, look, Kobe, I said, you're playing a team game. And I said, regardless of what you do, you're going to be great. I said, you're going to be one of the best players ever played this game. But I said, until you find a way to bridge this gap with some of the players in terms of not dominating the game, play within a system that a coach has established for you. And it was more than once they talked to him about it. And because it was frustrating to watch this talent that probably need to be channeled in a little bit different direction. And when he made that change, and then I was involved in a trade that a lot of people weren't happy with, that we traded Eddie Jones to Miami, who was an all-star player himself, and you just could not deny Kobe Bryant. He was going to take Eddie Jones' job. He was going to do it.
That's a year ago today that we spoke with Jerry West, and Jerry, of course, saw something in Kobe that I don't know how many others did, but he did at an early time and decided that he was going to trade a fan-favorite body, Divac, to the Hornets and get the rights to Kobe Bryant. Throughout the show, we'll be bringing back a lot of the interviews that we did at Super Bowl week where everybody had a thought, everybody had a story. Derrick Henry joined us and surprised us with the story that he had about Kobe. He was so nervous. He saw Kobe at the ESPYs, and he didn't want to go over and talk to him. He was so nervous because he didn't know if Kobe would know who Derrick Henry was. But we're going to do that as a tribute to Kobe. It was a year ago, and it doesn't seem like it was a year ago. And I said to Fritzy, I said, reach out to Ramona Shelburne because she had a great relationship with Kobe, and she had such wonderful stories last year, the ESPN NBA insider, senior writer, and Ramona joins us. I know you're busy today being pulled in a lot of directions, Ramona. Thanks for joining us. When do you think the public's perception or view of Kobe changed where you almost felt like you could hug him or he would hug you back as opposed to that assassin who was on the floor?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I really think it was, I think the real change was that the year he won the MVP, that only year he won an MVP award, which was 2008. And I think you saw Kobe kind of morph from this guy who was like the real lone wolf. I mean, we just got done talking about the anniversary of his 81-point game, right? And while that year was amazing, and I remember, you know, he was throwing up 50-point games all the time in that year because they had nobody else around him and all that. Like, that was the Kobe, you know, that was the old Kobe. That was the one who, you know, just shot a million times, and his teammates kind of never really understood him and he didn't really play within the structure of the team. And, you know, that was mostly the storyline. And then obviously with Colorado, that was a real, I mean, that's still a real blemish on his record, right? I mean, that's still something that we have to note and we have to sort of reckon with. But by 2008, like, I think some time had passed. He had changed in that new, especially when they got Pau Gasol on the team. He really was reinvigorated as a player and as a teammate, right? I mean, he wasn't a great teammate before that. And I thought he won the MVP because he became a better teammate. And you saw that side of him. And I recently had a conversation with Pau Gasol, Dan, and they hit it off immediately. And it was something, he told me something I never had heard before, which is unbelievable this happened. But I guess Kobe and Pau were in Barcelona at the same time in the summer of 2007. So this is the year before. Remember, this is the parking lot video where Kobe, you know, starts cursing at his teammates and, you know, wanting them to trade Andrew Bynum for Jason Kidd. You remember that video?
Yes.
It's the same summer as the parking lot video and the same summer as his trade demand. And Kobe and his family are on vacation in Barcelona. And literally, Pau Gasol's working out in the hotel gym down below. And they, like, bump into each other and start talking about how great it would be to play together because Pau needed to leave Memphis and Kobe was not happy in L.A. and they weren't winning. And it was like, they were like, it'd be great to play together. And Pau was like, yeah, there's no way because the only way they trade me to the Lakers is for Kobe, right? Like, that you'd have to have equal value. And, of course, Jerry West, the man you mentioned, was in Memphis. And he was dealing with his old protege, Mitch Kupchak, and they found a way to get that deal done. It was amazing it happened. And that year, Kobe and Pau, it was like instant. Like Pau said, he got traded. He went through his physicals. He showed up at the hotel at 1:30 in the morning. Kobe knocks on his door and is like, you ready to go? Like, are we going to win a championship? And I was like, hello, nice to see you again. It's 1:30 in the morning. But that was him. And like Pau, you know, for all of the trouble that, you know, Kobe was hard on Pau, really hard on him. You know, he called him a white swan and I'm the black swan, right? And you know, Matt Barnes told me, he goes, sometimes I had to go over to Pau after Kobe would yell at him and put my arm around him. I mean, he was brutal with Pau. But you know what? Pau thinks of him like his older brother because he pushed him. He got so much good stuff out of it. He got the best out of Pau. And I think that's how we really remember Kobe, is just a guy who got the best out of himself and wanted you to get the best out of yourself too.
Did you get to know him more after retirement or when he was still playing? Yeah.
I mean, I would say, honestly, Dan, like the last 5-6 years of his career is when we really talked a lot. I think I would say like the year we probably talked the most was the year right after Phil Jackson left. I mean, that was when he was trying, you know, after Phil left, it was like Kobe had to figure it out. Do you know what I mean? Like before Phil was the coach, And, you know, Kobe trusted him to put the pieces in the right places. And then Phil retired, and it was like Mike Brown and Mike D'Antoni and, you know, the steady stream of, you know, the Lakers going with big swings. Remember they traded for Dwight Howard and Steve Nash that year?
Yeah.
So those were those years where he was trying to squeeze one last championship. He wanted to catch Mike, man. And, like, that was – you know, he's sitting on five. Can you imagine? Like, you're sitting on five, and it's within reach, and you have talent. You have Dwight, who he had misgivings about when they traded for him, but he was like, I'm going to make this work, you know? And I think it was weird. He would call in. I'd be hosting radio in L.A., and he, you know, was always driving from Orange County. So he was always listening to the shows. And he would just, like, text or email right in the middle of the show. And I remember the one was like, we were talking about Dwight Howard, and I think I was saying what I thought Dwight needed to be, and Kobe was like, Dwight just needs to be like Bill Russell. He needs to be play defense and rebound and just be that guy for us. That's all we need. We don't need him to score. Like, he was coaching him through the media live on air.
So he's texting you while you're on the air.
Yeah.
Great.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. And because he's hoping Dwight's also listening to what I say and will change that, right? I mean, it was like so Kobe. So great.
What do you think Kobe would be doing? What do you think his next incarnation?
Yeah, you know, that's the part that's so sad for all of us, and you know, like, I know this is a day I'm trying to stay celebration of his life, you know, today, because I think that's what Vanessa asked for. And I want to respect that as much as we can. Right. His wife and three kids are really the people we should all be thinking about today. Right. As well as all the family members of the other seven people aboard. And I think what's so sad about it, Dan, is that, like, he had it all mapped out, man. I mean, he had his investment fund. He had Granity Studios. Like, you know, his longtime manager, her name is Molly Carter. She's much more than a manager. I don't even know if I should call her that. She came over from Gatorade and Nike and stuff. And she was running Kobe Inc. with him. And I mean, she told me, like, they had so many projects lined up for Granity, you know, Granity Studios. That's the one he does the comic books and the children's stories and all these other things. I mean, he had all this stuff lined up, and not just like season one, I mean, season 10, season 11. I mean, he's like the original streaming service or something. Right. And you know what Pal told me about why Kobe got so into these, to making books for children? He goes, you know, I want my kids to understand the lessons that I learned along the way, but they don't really listen to me. So I have to figure out a way to tell stories that appeal to kids, like, so that kids can hear them and learn them. I mean, it's so cool, man. Wow. Like, it's just, you know, and that's why he did it. And I think he would just be doing all this. I think he would be, you know, everybody in the NBA, all the young players, they all want to go work out with Kobe. I mean, I remember a time when everybody wanted to work out with Olajuwon, right? I mean, okay, go to Hakeem. He'll teach you. I mean, that's what it is now. Like, the workout with Kobe was go to Kobe, just work out with Kobe. And I'll tell you what it was always going to be is, like, he's going to put you through this hellacious workout. You'll probably want to throw up at the end. But, like every player wanted to go do it. I mean, it was like a rite of passage. I think that's what Kobe would be doing. He'd just be, you know, his dad to his four daughters, the husband of Vanessa, he'd do it as children's books and coaching. And I mean, Gigi, she would be, you know, probably, I think maybe starting high school. God dang, man. Yeah. You know, we'd be talking about her because she was, I mean, I'll tell you what, the WNBA players I know who, you know, of course Kobe got WNBA players to come train with his 10-year-old daughter, right?
Of course.
Of course he did that.
Yeah, of course.
Of course. She was really good. Like, she was, I mean, like, she was going to be, like, a WNBA player. She was going to be one of them, not just, like, on the team. Like, she's going to be Kobe in the WNBA. We'll be talking about her, too.
I want to play something for you. And yeah. This was the last time that I had Kobe on. It was April of 2018. And we started the conversation talking about coaching. Here's Kobe.
Mm. And you never gave any thought to being a coach.
I coach my daughter's team. That's it. That's the extent of it. I coach my daughter's team.
Are you good?
Well, I mean, they're learning, right? I mean, that's the key, right? You want them to learn. We do run the triangle offense.
Oh no!
It is the craziest thing in the world. Like, we'll be sitting there, right? We'll be sitting there, and I say, okay, let's come down, let's run a center opposite. Top pass is denied. Let's go back doorstep and then dribble weave with the guard coming out of the corner, and they'll go out there and just execute it. Boom.
How great is that? How great
is that? So Kobe, man, I love it. I mean, look, there are some things, Dan, and this is like every time I hear, I love hearing interviews because, you know, like sometimes you're interviewing someone and sometimes and you're asking them a question, they actually respond to it. Yes. And other times they're just going to go.
Yeah.
They're just going to say, you know, and that's how Kobe was, right? Like we'd sit down or talk and it was, I mean, I had a question, I'm sure. I had tons of questions. He just wasn't going to talk about it. He controlled what his story was going to be, right? Like, or he told you what his story, you know, his version of, and he was such a great, like there's Kobe, the man, and then there was this larger than life persona. And I just think he was unbelievable at not only building that larger than life persona, but really being that. I mean, my favorite Kobe story is when he taught himself to play the piano. Okay. And it was he was going to make this grand romantic gesture to Vanessa. They had, the year they were separated. Right. And, he taught himself to play Moonlight Sonata because, you know, he'd studied it and all everything that went into that piece. And, but it was like, he could have got lessons, you know, like, of course you could get lessons to teach you to play piano. But he's like, no, I had to teach myself by ear. So he would just learn that one song. Like, he didn't learn to play piano. He just learned how to play Moonlight Sonata. And I was like, and I was thinking, like, when he told me the story, I was like, that's amazing. And he did it. And, you know, remember those videos? He posted some videos of him practicing. And it would be like 3 a.m. He was posting this. He was on the road at some hotel. You know, I don't know where they had pianos on the road, but he brought one with him. I mean, he was like, and I was just like, did you just teach yourself to learn to play by ear? So that you could tell the story about it later, so that it would be part of that, like that larger than life persona. And I mean, he probably did.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, some, like, there's a part of me that's just like, I chuckle. Okay. Cause if you or I did it, we would just like, I don't know if I could take myself, like I'd laugh at it. Right. But he really was that, like, he really was this guy who just did these amazing larger than life things just so he could prove that he could do them. And I think he walked as a sort of figure like that. He knew full well, you know, when I went and talked to some of his high school buddies, he talked about that as a high school kid. Like, you know, he played the Jerry West interview. He knew how he was special that back then.
Yeah.
I think Kobe always saw himself that way. Like, he was this larger than life figure and he wanted to, you know, change the world. Even when his high school buddies, so they, you know, they used to drive on the desert in the middle of the night, you know, all these kind of stories. Right. And like, that's what they would talk about. He talked about how he was going to make a big impact on this world, man. I mean, he did. He certainly did. We're talking about him now. I'll always talk about him. I think Mamba mentality has just become something everybody knows what you mean when you say that. And I think about it. I think about him. I think about his advice all the time. Don't you?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, you know?
Yeah.
So he, you know, it's sad for me to think like how much he had left to do and how much all those people on the plane, I mean, the helicopter had left to do, but I also, man, he did a lot in 41 years. Oof.
I know you got a busy day, and I singled you out when Fritzy reached out. I just said I wanted to hear from you, so I do appreciate you joining us, Ramona. Thank you very much.
Appreciate you, Dan.
That's Ramona Shelburne, ESPN NBA insider, senior writer.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Dan Patrick Show weekdays at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
He's referred to as the Lonely Master in China. He is Jimmer Fredette. He just turned 31, and he is playing for the Shanghai Sharks. He scored 70 points in the game, the former BYU star. In fact, it was 10 years ago today, Jimmer, that you had 43 points as BYU beat San Diego State. Kawhi Leonard was playing for San Diego State at the time. He scored 22. Thanks for joining us. How are you?
I'm doing great, Dan. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. And yes, those were great memories 10 years ago. That's for sure.
What do you remember about Kawhi Leonard back then?
I mean, the thing about Kawhi is he was only there for 2 years, but I played him those 2 years, and from his freshman year to his sophomore year, you could tell he got substantially better, especially offensively. He was always gifted athletically, rebounded extremely well. You know, that was one of the big things to try to keep him off the glass, but he could just play defense. He affected the game in so many different ways. But then sophomore year, he started shooting, a little bit more from mid-range and from the three-point area, just got a little bit better offensively. And then obviously as he got into the NBA, he's just, blown up. He's played unbelievable basketball.
So you scored 70 a couple of days ago. Did you score 70 on purpose?
No, not really. I definitely just wanted to go out there and just be aggressive.
Did you know
and play my game? It just was.
But did
one
you
of those
know
games,
you had 70?
One of those games.
Did you know you were like, hey, you got 64. You got. You can get 70.
Oh. I definitely knew what my point total was because, I mean, the scoreboard is right there. You can see your points, throughout the whole game. So obviously, you're aware of what's going on. But at the end of the game, I got a steal at the end of the game, and it was just kind of one of those things where I was at 68 and I got an easy steal and was able to go in and, make it for the 70th point. So I wasn't planning on it, but, it happened and, it was a fun night for sure.
Have you ever scored 70 before in a game?
Actually, I have. So this is actually my third time scoring over 70 in the CBA. So I've scored 75, 73, and then this is my 70. So I've done it three times. The only player to ever do it in the CBA, I guess. So,
the talent that you're playing against is comparable to what?
These guys they're good players. I mean, they're good professional basketball players. I mean, it's not, European, EuroLeague level, but they're really good players. They're strong, athletic guys. Several of these Chinese guys have played, have had a little bit of stints in the NBA or in the G League or in some of those things, obviously, but they're high level players, but what they are is they're strong and they're physical, especially on the defensive end. I mean, they come after, the Americans every single night. They don't want you to score the basketball. They'll double, triple team you. They'll foul you. They'll push you to do everything they can to get under your skin and in your head. So it's definitely not easy on a nightly basis, but we have the ball in our hands so much that sometimes you're able to just, have a great game and just start feeling it.
But how concerned were you? Here you are married, you got two kids, you're going to China, you got COVID, the Hong Kong situation with the NBA, with Daryl Morey's comments. Like, was there any trepidation about going back to China?
For me, obviously, during this period of COVID, that was, the biggest concern for us. But we knew coming over here that we were probably going to be in a bubble for the whole season, and we have been. So as long as we were able to get the visa, that was probably the hardest thing to do, was to actually get the visa to be able to come over to play. But I knew that I was going to be over here for a long period of time without my family. So that's by far the hardest thing. I haven't been able to see him for 4 months.
Nope.
And, we'll play another 2 months over here at least until we go back home. So, I mean, I have two young ones, and that's not easy, but, it's a sacrifice you make sometimes as an overseas basketball player. I'm blessed to be able to have an opportunity to play still and make money and be able to provide for my family. So you have to look at it that way sometimes.
But if you weren't playing in China, what would you be doing? Where would you be playing?
I'd probably be playing in the EuroLeague still. I was with Panathinaikos in Greece last year, which was a great experience. I loved Athens. Really, really awesome to be able to go around Europe and see all the cool cities in Europe and be able to play against some great basketball teams and basketball players. I had a second year option to go back to Greece, but we decided not to. And this opportunity with Shanghai came back up, and decided to take this one. And it's been fun.
The Jimmer Fredette Family Foundation's mission is to spread kindness and strengthen families so they can raise children with strong moral character, and they come to the aid of youth who are hungry, cold, bullied, or afraid. It's the Fredette Family Foundation. Your first NBA game, I believe, was against Kobe Bryant?
Yes. Yes, it was. You know, obviously, this is the year anniversary of his passing, and that was so tragic. I remember, you know, last year when we were in Greece, my wife and I were sitting on the couch and we got the news, and it was just absolutely devastating for everybody involved, not, you know, with Kobe's family, but also the other families that were involved in the helicopter crash. But, you know, my first game, I walked in, I subbed into the game, and we were playing against the Lakers. I was with the Sacramento Kings, so it was a little rivalry. Everyone was amped up, and I walk in, and of course, you know, the first person that guards me is Kobe Bryant. And he walks right up to me, and he puts his, you know, forearm right into my chest and just says, "Welcome to the NBA." And I was like, "All right, here we go, me versus Kobe." So it was a welcome to the NBA moment for sure.
How did you do?
I think I was scared to take the first couple of shots. I think he was like stepping back and giving me those shots too. He was like, "All right, almost daring me to shoot it." And that's what I do, you know. But, you know, your first NBA game, you're just like, you don't know exactly what's going on. You're just trying to figure it all out. And as I got into the game, I got a little bit better. But those first couple of possessions were definitely something that I remember.
We ask this every time we have you on. Why aren't you on an NBA roster?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it's a mixture of a lot of different reasons, you know, obviously. But at this point, you know, I've had a couple of chances in the NBA, and some places have been better than others. But ultimately, you know, my path has led me over to Shanghai and playing in Europe and playing in China. It's more recently. And, you know, it's been a great opportunity and situation for me. So honestly, you know, I'm grateful and happy for the situation that I've been able to find over here, been able to succeed and do really well, make a name for myself over here, not only just in China, but back in the US. People are still, you know, seeing the highlights and seeing how I'm doing, which has been really, really great to be able to do. You know, the NBA has been it was a great opportunity for me, but, you know, it didn't work out necessarily exactly how I thought it would, or many people thought it would, but, it hasn't stopped me from continuing to play at a high level of basketball.
But would you rather be the man in China or a bench player in the NBA?
It depends on the situation. Like if I was a bench player that was coming in and playing, you know, there I was allowed to play my game and was, you know, playing 20 minutes a game and able to be a really integral part of a team, then I would love to be able to do that. I know, obviously, I'd love to be able to compete against the best in the world and be able to make an impact on a team like that. But being here in China and being able to have the impact that I've had, not just on the court, but off the court, has been something that's been special. You know, so I'd rather be doing that than necessarily just sitting on an NBA bench just to sit there. I think it's been better for my career and better for the impact.
Is your nickname the Lonely Master?
Yeah, it's the Lonely Master. So it's Jimo Dashen is what it's called. And Jimo means lonely. And it sounds like Jimmer, Jimo. And that's how people kind of pronounce my name over here. They can't really pronounce the ER. So they say Jimo, Jimo. And it means lonely. And then they put Dashen at the end, which means actually God, I guess. And then we changed it kind of to Lonely Master. So I didn't want to be known as a God. So I just said, let's do the Lonely Master.
but is it lonely? So lonely is based on how they pronounce your name. They don't think you're lonely. Yeah. They just, I mean, you are sort of lonely.
Yeah. Yeah, it was kind of a double meaning for it. What they told me, the interpretation from what my teammates told me, the fans said that, you know, Jimo, obviously you're alone. You're kind of over here by yourself. You're not with your family for one thing, but also it kind of means like you're kind of on the top of the mountain and no one can kind of reach your level. You know what I mean? So they're kind of saying like it's lonely on the top. And that's kind of the double meaning for it. And my first year that I got here, I got that nickname. And we had a great season, was MVP of the year. So it kind of just stuck, I guess.
Are they going to build a statue? Doesn't Stephon Marbury have a statue over there, Jimmer?
Yeah, he does. He does out inside of the Beijing Arena. I don't know if I'm at that level. I mean, he's, you know, the biggest thing that has been over here, and his team won 3 championships while he was there in Beijing, and they hadn't won for a long time. So, we haven't won any championships yet. Maybe if we get one, we'll see. But, yeah, he's got the statue out in front of the Beijing arena.
Could you give me 100 in a game over there?
Maybe we'll see. It's gonna have to go into like 4 or 5 overtimes probably, but you know, I'll try for you. I'll try.
But you get the green light, right? You can shoot whenever you want to.
Yes,
right?
You definitely get the green light. They want you to score. Like, they bring you over here specifically to score the basketball, you know, like that's what they're looking for. The Chinese players expect that from you. You have the ball in your hands. You know, if you're a scorer, they want you to score. If you're a big guy, you know, they want you to get 20 rebounds a game, you know, 5 blocks, you know, that type of thing. They bring you over here for a reason. You know, obviously you don't score, you know, 70 points every night, but every once in a while you're able to feel good. And I felt good last night and was able to make shots.
And you don't have to play any defense, right?
Only on certain occasions, of course.
Yeah, this is just like BYU. But, you don't have to play any defense, and you get to shoot. You got the green light, Jimmer.
Hey, you can do whatever you want. You gotta stick to your lane. Do what you're good at, right?
What is behind you? Like, is that your apartment?
So I'm in a hotel, in my hotel room right now.
Okay.
And we're in Juji, China. And so I've been in this hotel room for 4 months. So this has been what I've been seeing for the last 4 months, just kind of this curtain behind me and this small little room that we're in. So yeah, it's definitely interesting.
Is there like a Buffalo Wild Wings over there, or a Jersey Mike's sub, or like, is there anything that reminds you of home?
I mean, in this city, no. So it's funny because, you know, this city is considered a small city in China, but there's 7 million people here. And that's just kind of what they consider a small city. And, you know, so, but the thing is, we can't actually leave the bubble. So I've been we've been in the hotel, and they have, you know, a buffet that's prepared for us every day. And basically my meal is, you know, I get a salad with some white rice and chicken breast every day. And that's what I've been eating for the last 4 months. So I feel like I'm on a bodybuilding diet. So I feel healthy and feel good. But not anything of normalcy at this point. But hopefully when I get back to Shanghai, and I'll be able to get some stuff.
Lonely Master. He's the Lonely Master joining us from China. Hey, congrats, Jimmer. And hope you get a chance to see your family here soon. And good luck over there. And, you know, next time you go over 70, we'll have you back on again.
Sounds good, Dan. I appreciate it. Thank you. Love the show.
Thank you, buddy. That's Jimmer Fredette joining us from somewhere in China. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app.